Welcome to the podcast with a K. I'm Christian Corley. Joining me this week are James Baldock.
Greetings, fellow citizens of Huvania.
Yes, and Simon Daines.
All right.
Ah, excellent. Understated. Lovely. And it's Doctor Who chat this week on the podcast with a K with the I was going to call you the B team then, but actually, I was going to call you the B team, and then as I thought about it and thought how many podcasts James and I have done together, James McLean and myself, I realised that you are now the A team.
Hey.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Excellent.
It's excellent, isn't it? It'd be nice to get one of those big podcasts going one day with all five of us.
Yeah.
Hang on, let me count. Me, James, Simon, Gareth. Yeah, five of us, yeah. I tell you, and maths is not my strong suit. My strong suit.
Maybe we should do like a video cast where we're all sort of sitting in a studio together and having a confab.
Possibly.
A big gathering.
Gathering. Yeah, maybe. Well, we have some tentative plans for a live podcast later this year. That requires a few. What's the word I'm looking for? Organisational and the logistical issues to be ironed out. Well, you don't want to hear about that now, dear listener. No, what you want to know is what we're going to talk about. Well, do you know, there is lots to talk about in the world of Doctor Who. It's almost as if they knew that us three were getting together and thought, we'd better give them something to talk about. It's been months.
There is no possible alternative explanation.
Absolutely. So we've got five things we're going to be talking about. I'm going to give you a quick rundown, dear listener. We're going to talk about Alan Cumming's casting in the new series of Doctor Who. We're going to talk about VorpCon. We're going to talk about the Target novel covers, which I did a little bit of a chat about last time with Mr. McLean, but there's no reason not to cover that again. In fact, it wasn't McLean, it was Mr. Cavanna. There's no reason not to cover that again. Christopher Eccleston and location shoots not only around Sheffield, but also Portsmouth. It's almost as if Cardiff doesn't exist anymore. We'll start with Alan Cumming, who accidentally revealed that he has been cast in the new series of Doctor Who. Cumming, I don't know what Cumming's best known for. Is it that god-awful Son of Mask film, or is it GoldenEye?
You let me joke, Christian. I was just going there with that, but yes. I've got his CV up on the screen in front of me. I mean, I'm looking at it. I'm thinking he's been in some dreadful, dreadful films.
He has.
He was in all three Spy Kids films. I mean,
oh god, yeah, I forgot about Spy Kids.
Being in one Spy Kids film is unfortunate. Being in two is just careless. He turns up in GoldenEye. He was in the Flintstones 2.
Oh, he was in Robbie and Michelle's high school reunion as well, wasn't he?
Yep. Spice World. Goodness me.
Well, I think everyone was in Spice World, weren't they?
That's true. Everyone was in Spice World.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't missed much. Josie and the Pussycats. I will always know him as Nightcrawler.
Yes, of course, in the X-Men movies.
Which he is extremely good. So,
yes, he is.
I saw him as Hamlet, actually, a long time ago. It was a touring production, and I saw it in Dartford.
And what did you think of it?
It wasn't a terribly good production, let's put it like that. He was okay.
Right.
Bit wet. He was quite depressed, actually.
Interestingly, I was in Stratford-upon-Avon over the weekend, and we were...
As you do.
As you do, yeah. And we at the RSC, looking at... There's an exhibition they've got there about various things. And one of the things is an interactive video display about Tennant doing Hamlet. And the director there says, actually, Hamlet, to a considerable extent, is defined by who's playing Hamlet.
Yeah.
And what they bring to it. And that is essentially the entire production. So it wasn't a terribly good production. I wonder if he was actually...
I was being diplomatic.
Yes.
I've just discovered, thanks to the magic of Wikipedia, that Alan Cumming has written a novel called Tommy's Tale. He's also written an autobiography called Not My Father's Son, a memoir. He's had a cable talk show called Eavesdropping with Alan Cumming and produced a line of perfumed products labelled Cumming.
You made that up.
I did not.
Good Lord.
Somebody else might have done, to be fair.
In fairness, yes, this is Wikipedia. But he's an OBE as well.
Mm.
For presumably for services to... Scotland. I don't know. So he's apparently playing Scottish King James the Sixth in the new series of Doctor Who, which he accidentally shared on Twitter.
James the Sixth did.
Mr. Cumming did.
Oh right, okay.
Yeah. So that's interesting, because we haven't had much casting with regards to.
No, we know nothing. In fact, really.
Yes. Hence one of my earlier notes. There's another tweet from Mr. Cumming there, probably just coming denying that he's in the next series of Doctor Who. But we haven't heard much about the new series of Doctor Who, so it's nice to have some stuff to
even
go.
Even though they were revealed prematurely.
Even though
they were revealed prematurely in this case.
Yes.
Well, yes.
I think it wasn't it an interview he's supposed to have actually said this. I think originally.
I thought it was on Twitter.
Was it on Twitter? Yes.
I think it was in an interview for a podcast, and then he confirmed it after the podcast had gone out.
That's right. And then said, actually, I shouldn't have told you that yet. Sorry.
Yeah. Easily done, I should think, if you're a busy jet-setting actor. He's based in New York. How's he supposed to remember things like that with jet lag and what have you?
Well, exactly. You don't know what you're supposed to be promoting and what's still under embargo. I don't blame him in the least. And I'm sure everybody else is actually quite pleased that this is out of the bag, because now we can sort of think, hey, I'm coming playing King James and what's going to happen. So, you know.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what happened in King James's reign. Authorised version of the Bible. There was that chap he was friends with, George.
Well, is James the First of England?
Yes.
Which indicates gunpowder plot, surely. There's no
that's it.
Yes, that's what I was thinking as well.
Yeah. Shame it went wrong, really.
Well, that's controversial.
Restore the glories of Catholic England.
Say again?
Restore the glories of Catholic England.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure...
The cat among the pigeons now.
I'm not sure regicide is an apt topic for the podcast with a K.
No.
Although I do have my own superior regicide story.
Go on. Which
is take some beating.
Yeah.
So one of my ancestors, or not direct ancestor, but an ancestor from the same family, was William Corley, who was William the Regicide, one of the signatories on Charles I's death warrant.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes. Wow. And he was a parliamentarian. He was an MP for Chichester. And there's this lovely story that I read on the interwebs about him. He held a town meeting to discuss what they should do should the king's forces attack.
Yeah.
And during the meeting, the king's forces attacked.
Oh my word!
Which always tickles me, that story. Yes. So there you go. And he legged it to Switzerland during the Restoration.
Oh.
So regicide news on the podcast with a K there.
Yeah.
So
what do you think it'll be about the gunpowder plot? It's not going to be about the authorised version of the Bible,
is it? It's probably not about the Bible.
He did have a boyfriend, though, wasn't he? He was gay.
Oh, that's great, because Doctor Who doesn't do enough stuff with gay things.
No, it never comes up, I think.
Yeah. No. I mean, I think, obviously, the chatter about this has been, are we going to see a purely historical drama?
Mm.
Yeah, the first time in... Well, since Black Orchid, it was the last time we had anything that we might call purely historical, in which there were no aliens involved at all. And is this a throwback to the way the show was made in the 60s?
Well, if it is the gunpowder plot as well, there is a canonical issue there, because the Doctor Who The Adventure Game series in 2011 and 2012 were stated to be canonical by the BBC. Oh. And one of those is the gunpowder plot. The final one was the gunpowder plot.
Maybe the meddling monk gives Guy Fawkes nukes to blow up for the Houses of Parliament.
Yeah, I'm liking that. Who's playing the monk?
Stephen Fry.
Oh, I'm not liking that anymore.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Hugh Laurie. Dawn French.
Dawn French, there you go.
The meddling nun.
Ken Dodd. Oh, too soon. Sorry.
Alas.
He died, you know.
He did?
Yes.
He did, yeah.
You're supposed to say Diddy.
Oh,
no, Doddy, yeah. Actually, we should mention Ken Dodd as well, because obviously he appeared in The Happiness Patrol.
Delta and the Bannerman.
Delta and Bannerman. I'm thinking of Richard Price there for no reason. Delta and Bannerman. And yes, sadly, Ken Dodd are the last link to the old days of British theatrical comedy has passed away.
By Jove, missus. By Jove.
What a nice day. What a nice day for sticking a cucumber through Patrick Moore's. And was it Patrick Moore? No, it wasn't Patrick Moore, was it? Archbishop of Canterbury? Stephen Hawking's letterbox and saying the Martians have landed. Patrick Moore one was what a nice day for run up to Patrick Moore and saying, "Shows Uranus, Patrick."
Oh, God.
I will link to some Ken Dodd on YouTube for you, dear listener. Let us know what you think about the Alan Cumming casting. I think it's good. It shows some ambition from the Doctor Who production team, which I, personally speaking, I cannot speak for Simon or Mr. Baldock. But personally speaking, I did find that some of the decisions that have been made over the past few months lacking in ambition. So it's nice to see a established actor there.
Yes.
Yeah. I was talking to my wife.
I'm glad to hear that.
Occasionally, I talk to my wife. And I was saying, you know, with the casting of a female doctor, you know, it's a... Oh, maybe this is too controversial, but it's a very safe choice going for Jodie Whittaker. Maybe they are... just producing a safe show, but you know there are lots of very sort of quirky and unusual female actors out there. I don't know if I can still say actresses, and you know you could have gone for someone like Hayden Gwynn or someone like that. You know, somebody who would give a very unusual interpretation. And said that I know Jodie Whittaker is a very good actress, but you know they have gone for someone very mainstream, haven't they?
Well, I mean, I was watching Miranda.
Yeah,
and I thought Miranda Hart would have been an absolutely sensational doctor because I can see her being utterly stupid and having things with biscuit blasts and jokes and various other shenanigans in the TARDIS, and then I can see her within the same breath staring down Davos.
Yeah,
walking away from, and so I think she would have been splendid. And I agree with you, Whittaker is something of a safe pair of hands in that respect.
Yes,
she may astound us.
Anyway,
well, I think we're obviously entering uncharted territory.
Yes.
So it's a little bit difficult to put your finger on what's going to happen with this particular actress, who is obviously at the forefront of a complete change for the show, so there's very little we can say about that. Let's just take that side point, though, regarding an educational bent to the episode, at least, because we've had a report in the Mirror that says, it implies that Chibnall is keen to bring the show back to its 1960s roots, when Sidney Newman intended it to be an educational series for children. The source, it's all the Mirror. The Doctor has all the space and time to explore, so it'll be fascinating to see the gang from 2018 having a good rummage around in big, important events which have changed the course of history.
Yeah.
Now, of course, they did abandon this idea in the 1960s.
For good reason as well.
Yeah, so...
Have you seen The Reign of Terror recently?
Yes, it's on my DVD shelf.
Reign of Terror is one of those stories I confess I've never actually seen.
Have you not? My goodness me.
I know.
If you can't sleep at night, James, then put on The Reign of Terror. It's just deeply boring. It's very, very boring and very, very worthy. You know, hey kids, you should know about the French Revolution.
It's interesting. You say that because I was actually watching, and there is a slight Doctor Who connection here with Anne Reed and John Cleese. I was watching Hold the Sunset, now I've watched episodes 1, 2 and 4 in daylight hours, but episode 3 I haven't got to the end of yet because I keep putting it on iPlayer while I was in bed. I couldn't get to the end of it. I think there are certain shows, and I like Hold the Sunset. I think it's well written. I know it's not Frasier, for God's sake. It was perfectly good. John Cleese is good in it. Everyone's good in it. And there's some good laughs in there, but I couldn't get to the end of episode 3. I think there's certain shows that you don't watch at a certain time of day because they can induce somnambulism.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I went through a phase of watching certain bits of classic, and mostly Seventh Doctor actually, with the child who is now 10. And this was a couple of years ago. He really enjoyed the Happiness Patrol. He liked Delta and the Bannerman. He liked Silver Nemesis. But we watched Time in the Rani and we both fell asleep. And this was only about 7 o'clock in the evening. And I've not seen it in years, but it gives you an indication of how much I enjoy Time of the Rani, as you say. It's a great film, yeah. Yeah.
I haven't seen The End of Fenric since 1989.
Oh.
For scheduling, you know, personal scheduling, put the DVD on at bedtime reasons.
Yeah.
So, yeah, interesting. Let us know, dear listener, which Doctor Who episodes put you to sleep. Of an evening, while I'm addressing you, dear listener, hopefully you're enjoying the podcast so far. Perhaps you're on the drive to work, long drive to work, or on the tube, perhaps, or maybe you're in a field running through corn with the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. I would invite you to just check us out on Twitter, on Facebook, even. This will astound you. On Instagram, we are the podcast with a K, or Castor Beyond on Twitter. And also, you can listen to us on the website, www.beyondcastorbus.com. You'll also find us on Audio Boom, iTunes, Stitcher.com, TuneIn through the TuneIn app, and a few other places as well. So, we are attempting to expand our reach even further into almost unprecedented territory, which we'll be able to tell you about soon. We're also on YouTube. So, there you go. We're coming at you from all media. Let's move on. We've talked about that, Mr. Cumming, in Doctor Who Series 11. Let's stick to Doctor Who Series 11. We've had some location sightings.
Yes.
And they're not limited to Cardiff and South Wales, which excites me. No end.
Good.
So we've had recording in Sheffield recently, and also a suburb of Portsmouth as well has featured recently.
Gosport,
thank you, yeah. So, I mean, these places are distinctively not Cardiff. I understand that they're also filming to India.
Really?
Yeah, sure, it's a rumour about that. I think it's going to be a possible companion exploration story. That's one of the ideas floating around. It's going to be about exploring the legacy of one of the companions and looking at her roots. How true this is, I don't know. We do know Rosa Parks is going to show up later on.
Yeah.
Hence the South Africa filming. But yeah. Did they go to the castle when they were in Gosport? Do you know?
Can you give us a bit of background on the castle, James?
It's great. It's an English heritage property. It is well worth a visit if you're in that neck of the woods. Years ago, they had this lovely audio commentary, which was basically a French knight and an English knight spending the entire tour as you're walking around the inside the castle, bickering with each other. It was like a scene from a Monty Python film. Very, very good. It's sadly, I don't think that's there anymore, but the castle still is, and it's nice. I mean, I know nothing of Gosport apart from that, although there was a nice home and garden store down there as well.
Bradley Walsh was spotted in the Sailmaker pub, and it's brilliant. Student Lewis Jeffries, who studies film studies and creative writing at the University of Portsmouth and has a life of working for McDonald's ahead of him, snapped photos at Little Woodham, a village which is styled on the 17th century.
Ooh.
So that may be a clue there. There's no mention of the castle.
Lewis Jeffries does pop up on Facebook from time to time. He does write about this stuff as well.
Right.
For one of those little sites that
Joking, Lewis. Knuckle down, young man.
Yeah, and he's forging his way ahead in terms of getting Doctor Who work out and building up a portfolio. So
good for you, Lewis.
Listening, hello, and yes.
Yes, yeah. It's what we do.
It's what we do.
so that's happening, and good photos, Lewis, as well. So, the Sheffield thing is the one that interests me the most because it's Sheffield, which is like, I was never one of these people who expected to see the TARDIS land at the corner of the road as a child. I'm also not one of these people who saw the companion as the identification character. I'm one of what, you know, I'm old school. The Doctor was the identification character. So to have, you know, Sheffield feels almost local. At least not local, you know. It takes 2 hours to drive there from here. But my wife's family are from Rotherham, so it almost feels like it's here where I live. So it would be nice if they actually came further up the A1 and maybe hit North Yorkshire rather than South Yorkshire, Doc. We will see. South Yorkshire.
You just said about the Doctor being the identification figure.
Hmm.
And that being old school. Whereas yes. if we're talking 1963 old school, the companion is the identification figure.
I think that is, from the off, it is the companion, because she's the Susan's the first person you see, isn't she? You see her before you see the Doctor. And I think it's like with Rose, that you meet Rose before you meet the Doctor. But I think there is a large amount of Doctor Who fans from the classic series era who see the Doctor as the identification character. Yep.
Simon, what are your thoughts on that?
I am intrigued. I am intrigued. I have no thoughts. I have never identified with Adric. I don't know. Don't know. I suppose Susan definitely was the identification character, wasn't she? And
yeah,
Ian and Barbara weren't.
They were the parent characters,
were mum and
dad,
weren't they?
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, I never identified with Turlough or Adric.
I mean, the purpose of the companion is to feed the Doctor lines.
Really. Exactly, that is the real purpose.
What are you going to do now, Doctor?
Yeah.
More than being identification, because, you know, don't know, I mean, how many of us identify with somebody of a particular age? Don't know. How many people identified with Adric? How many people identified with Rose? You know.
I have to say, I felt a strong affinity with Mel.
Yes, let's not go there.
Actually, we talk about that. We mentioned Ken Dodd earlier, and I actually went back and rewatched the episode of Delta and the Bannerman in question, which features Ken Dodd.
Yeah.
And Mel's behaviour throughout the entire exchange is utterly ludicrous, in that you've got a situation where Ken Dodd is saying, hey, you've won a competition and you're going to go to Disneyland. And Mel is absolutely thrilled. And says, I've never won anything before. Can we go to Disneyland? Can we go to Disneyland, Doctor? Like some sort of lovesick six-year-old, you know? And I'm sitting there thinking, you've got a time machine. Yeah.
You could go to the opening day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, he's not... I mean, Ken Dodd in that episode actually isn't particularly titty hilarious, is he?
No, he's great.
He's not really playing it as Ken Dodd.
No, he's not.
He had some good serious credits over the years, didn't he?
Yeah.
Old Doddy. And of course he had, you know, he had one of the biggest selling hit singles of the 1960s as well.
Yeah. So we could now sing a medley of them.
Well, maybe you could. I'm not sure I could. Oh,
actually, I'll tell you something I read years ago. There was some aging European actress.
Told you.
Some sort of Greta Garbo person was on Desert Island Discs. I can't remember who she was, but they got to her. They said, right, tell us your next choice. Tell us your next choice then. And she said, I hope this isn't going to be too rude to include. She said, okay, I want a penis.
What?
And there was a stunned silence. I said, yeah, look, we'll get to your luxury item later. What's your next record? I want a penis. Yeah, okay. Well, no, a penis. Ken Dodd, a penis.
Yep.
Radio 4, no stranger to controversy, of course, but yes.
Mispronouncing news on the podcast with a K. Okay, let's. I mean, we've got a few other things we're going to chat about. Shall we talk about Eccleston?
Yeah,
because he's been interviewed, ostensibly about his new Macbeth show, performance show. And he's had a few things to say about what happened when he left Doctor Who. Sort of not the reasons why he left Doctor Who, but the kind of fallout personally for him, which makes him quite uncomfortable reading. He's basically said the BBC blacklisted him for quitting. Now, you could wind back the clock and check Eccleston's career following Doctor Who, and you'll find that he didn't do any BBC work for about 10 years.
It's more like five.
Is it five? Okay.
Five, but yes.
The first thing that came to mind was the A word. I couldn't think of him being in anything before that on BBC.
Hang on a second. I'm going to check this out there, because I actually had the same thought and thought, how long was it since the departure of Eccleston that he was off the BBC? And as far as I can see, hang on a minute. So yeah, so he did Doctor Who in 2005, and then he went to Hollywood and was in the likes of G.I. Joe, which of course he doesn't enjoy very much. He did have
a dreadful Scottish accent in G.I. Joe.
Yeah, I confess I've not seen it. 2010, he was in Lennon Naked.
Oh, was that BBC? That was BBC 4, was it?
BBC 4, yeah. That was
right, okay. Starring. Yeah. That now called Maury as Yoko Ono as well, didn't it? It was well cast, and it had Andrew Scott as Paul McCartney. Which is a very good performance as Paul. There's lots of people doing Paul McCartney, but he kind of gets it spot on. Going back to G.I. Joe a moment.
Yeah.
He's actually... You know how they used his eyes in The Day of the Doctor?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Just as Hurt is regenerating. In the second G.I. Joe movie, he's not in it, but they've used his eyes in exactly the same way to show that it is the same character. I think he was Destro. I might be wrong about that. I thought that was worth mentioning. So it's a 5-year gap then, I suppose.
Yeah, but it's still long enough to make you think, yeah, maybe there was something going on there.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely. He says, what happened around Doctor Who almost destroyed my career. I gave them a hit show and I left with dignity, and then they put me on a blacklist. I was carrying my own insecurities, as it was something I had never done before, and then I was abandoned, vilified in the tabloid press and blacklisted. For those of you with shorter memories, you may not recall that Christopher Eccleston was... how did it go again? He was announced as leaving, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But there was something wrong with the timing, or I think
it was the day after the first episode.
Yes,
that's right. The timing was out.
Very soon afterwards, wasn't it? Yeah.
And I think the press release from the BBC was not to his liking.
So
he was in The Leftovers. He was which TV show. He's in Thor: The Dark World, which was the worst of the Thor movies.
It's a dreadful film.
The worst of the MCU movies, actually, I think it's probably fair to say.
I think it probably is, yes.
Yeah. And obviously he was nearly going to be in The Day of the Doctor. We've talked about this on Podcast with a K in the past, so, just flick back to 2013 for details of that. Should the BBC be blacklisting people because they've been unhappy? I don't know.
It depends whether they were or not, whether it was just that he didn't get work and then concluded that he'd been blacklisted.
Yeah.
Well,
if somebody came up to him in the bar and said, hey, Chris, you've been blacklisted,
yeah,
would you necessarily believe them? I don't know.
Attributes some of this to his agent. According to The Independent, after making the decision to quit, he claims his agent warned him that the BBC regime, unquote, was, quote, against him.
Yeah.
I was told by my agent at the time, you're going to have to get out of the country and wait for regime change.
It sounds like he's in a sort of a dictatorship in South America.
It does. It sounds like he's... No, it sounds like he's been doing undercover ops in Iraq, basically.
I think it depends whether it was true. I mean, if it was true, then, you know, you don't want public corporations behaving like that. And
no, you don't.
You know, I don't like saying we don't pay our license fees to so-and-so because it makes me sound like a sort of Daily Mail colonel type. Nevertheless, given that the BBC is funded by the public, you would expect a certain sort of ethical standard of people who work there. And there was clearly some unpleasant behaviour on the Doctor Who set for...
Yes.
Not from Eccleston, but on the Doctor Who set for its first season. And
well, as I understand it, there was some unpleasant behaviour with regards to Mr. Eccleston himself.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was unprovoked. So...
Yeah,
as I understand it,
the vibe I get from certain people is difficult to work with. That old maxim about
that's just having an opinion, isn't it?
No evidence for it whatsoever. But from what I can understand, if things were difficult, it would perhaps be more likely to provoke a reaction from him than perhaps from. Actors who were, let's say, less established and perhaps more inclined to toe the party line to get things done.
Yeah.
I think I get the impression a couple of things there. I mean, I get the impression that he was, you know, he's actually, if you see him interviewed, he's quite a quiet personality. You know, he's not ebullient and bouncy like David.
He's not a star, is he?
No, and therefore people perhaps preferred working with Tennant because he was bouncy and fun, and Eccleston is rather more broody and gets on with it.
I'm not saying he hasn't got box office, because obviously he's Macbeth at the RSC.
Oh yeah,
but he's not you know, big star guy. He's serious actor guy.
Yeah, he is. I mean, I think the other thing is that, you know, conversely, I've heard people say how easy he was to work with, and he's a very nice guy. You know, he's a nice man to work with. Perhaps he doesn't lead a company in the way that, I don't know, that Pertwee did or something like that. But,
If you're a young actor, actress, and you have a choice of working with Christopher Eccleston, David Tennant, Matt Smith, or Peter Capaldi, which of those four would you choose?
I don't know what Matt Smith or Capaldi are like to work with.
Well, you don't know what any of them are to work with. But in terms of, you know, what they've done and the status and et cetera, I would think you'd probably go for Eccleston or Capaldi.
Yeah, exactly.
Choosing my words carefully, I'm going to go with Capaldi because I've got friends who worked with him before who say how lovely he is, generally. Mm-hmm. How keen to get on with the job in hand, but also how nice as well, and welcoming, and I everything that I've sort of heard about him sort of indicates that he was somebody who got a balance right between, you know, going in and doing the best job he could, but also maintaining that sense of contact with the people.
Yeah,
talking about making the tea. Mm, so I choose him.
Okay. Okay, but yeah, I think the point stands there. I think there is this, different people work with different people in different ways, don't they? It's very difficult, you know. I mean, it's difficult enough. You know, I don't work in an office staffed by anyone other than myself, and one of the reasons is that it is difficult to find the right blend of personalities to get the job done. Mm. And the same is true in any walk of life, in any career.
Yes.
Any type of work, place of work.
I think one of the problems with this whole situation is that every time there is a pattern, and every time Eccleston is interviewed, the pattern repeats. And what happens is that he's being interviewed to promote whatever film he wants, or whatever film or TV series he's in, as you do when you're an actor, you know that's part of the gig. But of course, the question is inevitably going to turn to Doctor Who because of the circumstances under which he left it and the sense of animosity. So of course, when you're in that situation, you can't not talk about it because you know they'll make something up.
Yeah.
So, of course, he says something, and, of course, that's the headline they run with. And then you get the fan base saying, why is he constantly complaining about Doctor Who?
When
the truth of it is he isn't. It's just that you don't bite the hand that feeds you.
Yes.
So you've got this sense of negativity about it. I mean, all he tells the truth, or his version of the truth, and perhaps with a certain... he's become increasingly candid over the years, but he's not named names, he's not given specifics. But, of course, it comes across as negative. It's like that old joke about the monk who's only allowed to say two words a year under his vow of silence. And the first year he says, bed hard. And the abbot says, all right, I'll get that sorted. I'll get a different bed for you. And then a year later they get him back and he says, oh, food cold. I says, all right, we'll see if we can do something about the temperature. And then the third year he comes back and says, room cold. And of course they say, oh, yes, all right, well, we'll put a heater in there or something if you want. And the year after that, he's completed his vows. The abbot says, right, you can talk again. What do you want to say now? He says, well, I'm leaving. The abbot says, I'm not surprised. You've been here 4 years. All you've done is complain. And broadly speaking, that is Eccleston in the press about Doctor Who. Every time he comes up, that's what he says. Therefore, it's viewed as very negative. I refuse to accept that he left that studio with not a single happy memory of his experience.
Yeah.
It's just that we don't get to hear about them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it doesn't take long to search the internet and find some nice stories featuring Christopher Eccleston meeting young fans. So
exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's. I think a lot of it, and I said this the other day. I think a lot of the anti-Eccleston vibe stems from jealousy. Well, not jealousy. Resentment that he won't do the conventions and he won't play the fan game.
Yeah.
In the way that his successors have. And that, as far as I'm concerned, that's his prerogative. I think we should throw in a hissy fit just because he doesn't turn up at Comic-Con.
Totally. But
that's me.
You know. Patrick Troughton didn't do conventions for a long, long time.
Very long time, yeah.
Yeah. What did Baker, really, did he? I mean, Baker was notoriously difficult to work with.
Oh, yeah. I think Tom Baker was much more difficult to work with than Eccleston, by all accounts. Especially towards the end.
Towards the end, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's that. Now, we did talk about it briefly last week, but it's always good to get a number of different opinions on certain things on the podcast with a K. And my educated, learned colleagues will know that there are some new Doctor Who books being released, Doctor Who novelizations, in the Target style.
Mm-hmm.
And they're by Russell T Davies, Stephen Moffat, James Goss, and Ginny Colgan.
Yep.
And they feature art by a gentleman called Anthony Dry, who basically, if it wasn't for Anthony Dry, we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation now due to the very boring hereditary of this podcast, which I won't go into. So... these lovely pieces of work have been produced. These great, great pieces of art adorning the cover of The Christmas Invasion by Jenny Colgan. Twice Upon a Time, Russell T Davies' Rose, James Goss' City of Death, and the Day of the Doctor's Stephen Moffat's, or Stephen Moffat's The Day of the Doctor. I'm going to tell you a little secret.
Yeah.
Mr. Dry did a version of the Christmas Invasion cover many, many years ago. It's not a secret because he had it on his website, but he did a version of the cover of that many years ago, and he's basically reused the same elements and made it even better than it was in early 2006, which is astonishing. I was fortunate enough to see these quite early on, the Rose cover he shared with me a few months ago. It's all stunning work. He's absolutely at his best. It's proper... you know, there's the feel of Achilleos, but with the directness, I suppose, of the modern technology brings to it. What do you think of these colours?
Very good. Yeah. Very good indeed.
Yeah, I'm liking them. They look authentically Target-ish.
Yes.
Yes.
I like the way he's doing the Daleks as well. They look like Christos Achilleos's early Dalek illustrations.
Yes, they do. Yes.
And they've got that TV-21 element, and yet retaining the NSD Dalek elements too. I'm agog with admiration.
Absolutely. And what do you think of the choice of novels, though, from the BBC? Or novelizations, I should say. Because it is quite a mix, isn't it? Obviously, Twice Upon a Time, which is the last episode to be screened to date, Christmas Invasion, Rose, City of Death, which obviously never been novelised, and The Day of the Doctor?
I don't know. They're reasonable choices. Maybe some of the others would have been more interesting. Be interesting to see if Paul Cornell does another version of Human Nature.
Yes. Well, although I mean, Human Nature, the original novel, is about as far as far from target as you can get.
It is. Yeah.
Layered. It's very, very good. But it, yeah. I mean, yeah. The target novel of that TV episode is. Good as it will undoubtedly be, is going to sort of pale into insignificance next to
them. I do hope they can get Terence Dix to write one of them. I know he's getting on a bit, but it'd be very good.
I'm looking at the cover for Rose, and what I like about it actually is the fact that Rose's head is noticeably bigger than the Doctor's.
Mm.
The way they've layered that so that she is, I mean, and she's not exactly a colour image, but sort of blended to look almost colour, whereas he's a black and white picture that's sitting quite firmly behind her, which I think says an awful lot about the episode.
That was the thing with the Kurios' covers, though, wasn't it? That he always did, or nearly always did, the Doctor in black and white.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got the Day of the Doctor cover. You've got two Doctors in black and white and the older Doctor in sepia.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
So great stuff there. I'm not entirely sure what the release date of those is. It must be very soon because there is a signing at the Forbidden Planet London Megastore on Friday the 13th of April from 6 to 7. And I do know that Mr. Dry is travelling down from Liverpool to attend that.
Well, according to a well-known entertainment news site, the books are going to be released on Friday the 5th of April. So not, on the 5th of April, whatever date that is. Not, it's probably not a Friday. But, yes, $6.99 each.
Yeah, excellent.
Not too bad. 5th of April is a Thursday.
Is a Thursday, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the target novels. The modern era. Let us know, dear listener, which Doctor Who episodes you would like to see novelised in target-style form, adorned by Anthony Dry's art. I'm not for any moment suggesting that the BBC will continue using Mr. Dry for these publications, but let's face it, they probably should.
Christian, do you have one that you'd like to see?
I do. And that would probably... Do you know, I'd like to see... I have a couple. I'd like to see The Unquiet Dead. But I'd also... Yeah. Like to see how the end of that series is fares in novelised form, because it's a bit of an epic, but likewise the end of the following series as well.
Indeed.
So the Parting of the Ways and then the year after Doomsday and Army of Ghosts and Doomsday. I'd like to see both of those novelised, because obviously they're two parties for start off. But, you know, there's such a lot going on there, and they do have an epic cinematic swing to them, especially the second one. But the first one, you know, you've got the regeneration, but you've also got the cliffhanger of the previous episode as well, which is also one of the best resolutions to a Doctor Who cliffhanger. And it also, I think, that two-parter flies in the face of everything that's been said about two-parters in New Who, because it doesn't...
Yeah,
you know, we've got to do it a different way in the second part, otherwise people will be bored. You know, they did it at the end of the last series, but you know, they don't do that with The Parting of the Ways. It's Bad Wolf and Parting of the Ways. It's just a continuation of the adventure, and it works perfectly. It's a great story.
Yeah,
that's what I would say anyway. Mm. What about you guys?
Revelation of the Daleks.
Yeah. Sleep No More.
Oh. Controversial.
No, Sleep No More gets a very bad press.
It does. We should address this at some point in the future.
We should do that. I like it far more than most other people do. I think, and at least it was different. So, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it may have to be different, and it does have a lot to And a lot of people didn't like it at the time. I didn't mind it myself. It wasn't perfect. It certainly wasn't imperfect. Well, we'll leave that behind, and we will maybe give Sleep No More some attention at some point in the future. Yeah. That future may or may not be before Sunday, the 9th of September, where at the Printworks in Manchester, Vwarp, an independent celebration of Doctor Who, is taking place. That's Sunday, the 9th of September. Among the guests are, well, Paul McGann, Peter Davison, Colin Baker. It's looking like being a very great day. It's Gareth Cavanagh is involved. There are panels, and we're looking forward to it. I'm hoping I'm going to be able to go. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot being squeezed in, and there are simultaneous events taking place. And there's a few things still to be announced as well.
Good.
So that's looking very good. That's in September. There's a Troughton stage, a Hartnell stage, and a Pertwee stage, which is nice. And there's various things: Stripping the Doctor, Doctor Who magazine, A Doctorless Universe, The Music of the Universe, Crashing Through Time, Graham Harper Uncut, which kind of suggests that Graham Harper might be there. So there you go. That's worth checking out. And the great thing about this is that it is not an overly expensive convention. Tickets are available from £20.
Gosh.
So that's good. There is a VIP version, which, a queue buster type of version, which for £250, which is probably intended for industry professionals and super fans. But yeah, £20 will get you a lot of stuff on that day, and that's good value for a convention. Wouldn't you say, Simon Daines?
Sounds tremendously exciting. I might even go.
And if Manchester and September are too far away, where would you recommend for a convention, Simon?
You're just
encouraging him now, aren't you?
something. Coming soon, Bedford Who Charity Con 4.
And when's that?
Saturday the 7th of April. Lots of tickets. No, sorry. Few tickets. Few tickets still available. No, we do have lots of tickets available. We have plentiful supplies of tickets available. One of the things that I'm sure Gareth and the other the Warp organisers will find is that this time in the lead up to conventions, it's just over 3 weeks till our one, the convention organisers start panicking. People always buy their tickets at the last minute. They're always intending to go, but they always buy them at the last minute, and it rather causes convention organisers to panic because they think, oh God, is anybody going to come? This may be letting out too many trade secrets, but it's always the way. Most people buy their tickets at the last minute, and you get lots of emails saying, oh God, I haven't got a ticket, are there any left? But yeah, we're doing well. It's going to be good. I've even written some sketches.
Oh.
Yes.
Are these comedic sketches?
Comedic sketches, yes. Yes, they're most amusing. Because it's in Bedford, Bedford is, of course, the site of the Dalek Mines. So there is a sketch being written on that theme, which will be terribly funny, assuming I can get somebody to perform it.
Will it be uploaded to social media?
What?
I think the world deserves to see these.
There are a couple we did last year that are on YouTube, actually.
Okay.
Yep. And they're on our Facebook page, too. There's Peter Purvis and Maureen O'Brien doing one, which is... I thought it was tremendously funny, but then I wrote it.
Did anyone else laugh?
There's another one we did with Jeffrey Beavers as the master, and he was visiting a psychiatrist who was played by Maureen O'Brien. That's funny, too.
Good. Is that on YouTube as well?
Yep, and it's on our Facebook page, Bedford Who Charity Con Facebook page, which is always worth a visit.
And how much are tickets to Bedford Who Charity Con?
Depends.
Oh, all right, sort yourself.
£42.50 for adults. Cheap.
Okay, good.
Then we've got family tickets and concessions and things like that.
And of course, it's not lining your pockets, is it?
Nah, Nah, don't make a penny, mate.
So the charity is...
Bedford Food Bank.
Yeah.
It's a tremendous boost to my ego, though, so, you know, I get that out of it. And I get to drink. I get to drink with the guests sometimes.
Lovely. So that's yes. Bedford Who Charity Con.
Yes,
which takes place on April the 7th.
Thank you.
Excellent. And I'm sure you'll have lots to tell us afterwards.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We'll have to do a debrief podcast.
Oh God.
Undoubtedly. that brings us to the end, I think, of this week's chat. I would encourage you, dear listener, to get a hold of tickets to any conventions you fancy. Conventions are going through a bit of a regeneration and renaissance at the moment, I feel, with a stripped back approach. Check out for ones that are nearby with good guests and with a bit of history behind them. If not from the actual convention itself, then the people involved, and get yourself along to one. If you've any comments on Alan Cumming, Target Novels, Christopher Eccleston's recent revelation, Doctor Who shooting around the United Kingdom and further afield, or even old Ken Dodd, drop us a line on Twitter or Facebook or at beyondcasterbus.com, or you might even, and no one's done this yet, you might even head to the Audio Boom page, audioboom.com, and find the podcast there and leave us a reply, an audio reply, because you can actually do that. I await it happening with bated breath, nevertheless. Until next time, from Simon Daines, James Baldock, and myself, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye all.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.